Welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Jessica, and I am here with two very special guests. Would you like to introduce yourselves?
My name is Steens. I am the illustrator on Archival Quality. I'm a cartoonist and editor, and every couple of months I teach cartooning at Webster University.
I'm Ivy Noel Weir. I'm the author of Archival Quality. I have a day job as a collection development librarian, and I write spooky, moody comics for young people.
Very nice. Thank you for joining us. So Archival Quality, that was just listed on one of the best of, I believe. Am I correct? Like best of the decade?
Yeah.
Or yeah.
Yeah. I think it was, so it was on Newsarama's Best of the Decade, and then there were a couple of other smaller lists as well that we were listed on.
Comics Beat.
Yes, yeah. Yes. So I really liked it. Would you like to just talk a little bit about, tell our listeners what it's about and sort of how you both came together to work on it?
Sure. So Archival Quality follows the story of a young woman named Sel. She works as a library assistant and loses her job after she kind of struggles through a nervous breakdown of sorts, which requires her to take an extended leave from work. So in looking for another job, she finds a kind of interesting and odd position at a museum's historical medical library. And the job is to kind of do like dog body sort of archiving work, just, scanning and applying metadata and organizing files, but it has to be done overnight. And as part of the job, they ask her to live on site in an apartment in the museum. And as she starts working there, she meets the rest of the museum's employees and starts having visions of a young woman who appears to her in her dreams. And as time goes on, she realizes that the young woman appearing to her may be the ghost of a spirit that is trapped in the archives of the museum. So she has to kind of team up with the museum librarian and curator, and they research through the archives to try and figure out what happened to this young woman and how they can set her free. So it's really, it's as much a ghost story and a mystery as it is kind of a exploration of mental health and dealing through really rough periods in your life and learning to help yourself and help others and kind of get started on the path to maybe, you know, being able to find real help for what's going on with you.
I really liked all of that about it because you really didn't know what direction it was going to go in. And it was a very clever way to bring up just a bunch of topics. I know the building which she worked in, it was it like an asylum, a sanitarium at one point?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it was, you know, with a lot of, so I grew up in Philadelphia, and there are a lot of really, really old buildings in the city of Philadelphia, obviously. And so almost every building was something else at some point. You know, and sometimes you're kind of shocked by what they were, you know, you're like, I work in this office building and it used to be a hospital, you know, or things like that. And so, you know, even playing into the name Archival Quality, you know, as someone with my master's in library science who has worked as an archivist, you know, the idea of things kind of persisting or not fading away or like, you know, things changing and being preserved over time, you know, because the building had had such a storied history, even before it was, you know, the museum and library where she works now, the spirits that were there before are still there.
And I know that, I mean, you know, obviously things have changed in how we deal with mental health, how we look at mental health since around the time period that the spirit had been there. Unfortunately, it didn't progress as quickly as it could have because, for you know, we here on Long Island, we have Kings Park nearby, mm-hmm. which was notorious for all sorts of things. But I thought that it was just, it was really interesting. And just to sort of put somebody with what Sel herself was going through to kind of figure out and solve a mystery about someone who had also suffered in the past. It was just sort of a clever way to sort of go about talking about just how mental health is still actually looked at today. And also, you know, what the ghosts of past treatment, what came from that?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's a topic that's close to my heart personally. And, you know, I had researched a lot about it when I was in undergrad. I did my undergraduate degree in fine art and art history, and I focused on antique or turn of the century medical photography, and a lot of that is, you know, records of mental health treatments that we would now think of as barbaric.
Absolutely.
But, you know, were kind of thought of as life-saving at the time. So I think, you know, what interests me about history is, you know, that hindsight, you know, that we're able to look at something now and go, oh, well, we would never do this now. But then I think, you know, well, in 100 years, somebody's going to look back and be like, I can't believe they did this then. You know?
Exactly. Man, yeah, absolutely. And I liked just the, so would you like to talk a little bit about the artwork and the style, how it fit into the story?
Yeah, absolutely. When I started, I kind of had an idea of the kind of palettes and the inspiration that I was going for. But then a few months into our project, I visited Ivy in Philadelphia and went to actually see the Muir Museum, which is, you know, where the inspiration is from. And it definitely changed kind of how I was going to go about creating this world that they live in for, you know, these few months. I drew a lot of skulls. I think I'm at a point where I'm like, no more, please. But yeah, so I definitely worked with that as inspiration. One of the things that I know a lot of people appreciate about Archival Quality is the fact that it is a book with a diverse cast.
Yes.
I know when Ivy first came to me with the project, you know, she didn't really put in, you know, what they look like. That was the kind of thing that was left up to me, which is actually really nice. You know, having worked with other writers before, being able to create these characters on my own definitely made it feel like a collaboration, and more so and less of, you know, an artist just drawing what the writer writes, you know what I mean?
Right.
It definitely felt more like it was our baby of a book. But I know when I was, you know, illustrating these characters, I tried to focus on, you know, what is happening to them, what are their emotions. One of those kinds of creators that's very empathetic, you know, anytime I kind of draw emotions or what's going on in people's lives, I think about like, well, how will that affect me and what does that look like on my face? And I think that's one of the things that definitely helped with the story, because it is such a quiet, slow burn kind of story. The focus is so much on these characters and what's going on in their heads, you know, action scenes and beautiful spreads. You know, it's definitely something more nuanced. So that was a lot of fun to work on. I also like that, you know, I can just make them people of color, because, you know, I've said this plenty of times before, but, you know, white people aren't the only ones that have adventures, you know, and I feel like it should be really great for people to read a horror story, you know, that has such a unique but also worldwide theme of, you know, mental health, and having it attract people who don't normally see themselves in those kinds of stories. So, yeah, those are kind of what I was thinking about when I was drawing. Another thing I also did, I wanted to make sure, is that it felt super real. And so I made like Pinterest boards with all of their outfits, and I would have them wear these outfits for half of the book, and then at the other half of the book they'd start re-wearing outfits. So it just felt like this is something that normal people would do, you know?
Yeah, so yeah, because I know, like, you know, growing up with older cartoons and older, I guess, comic books, it was like either like they never changed their clothes. Like, so did they go right to a closet and there were like 50 different ascots and blue jeans?
Right.
Or
as much as I like that, that kind of classic comic cartoon style is definitely one of my favorite things. Anytime I would see that sort of thing in a cartoon or a comic book, I would say, this is genius. I love this. But
but it didn't, it doesn't really fit here.
Yeah, yeah, it doesn't really fit. That's definitely something more that's more, you know, whimsical. So, yeah, I definitely wanted to make sure that it felt grounded, you know?
I think it really did. I think one of the, so the relationships between Sel and the characters that she meets when she begins working at this library, at this archive, versus the relationship that she has with her boyfriend, I found that to be a really realistic feeling situation. Because her boyfriend, I wasn't sure if he was really supportive or if I was supposed to be rooting for him, but he kind of struck me as like the type of person, like sometimes when you meet somebody, your relationship is one thing, but you grow into different ways, or like he thought he acted like he understood, but he kind of just didn't.
Yeah. I think that's one of the nice parts about Ivy's writing though, is that these characters feel so real that everyone has a different view.
Yeah. I feel like Kyle is a particularly polarizing character for exactly the reasons you just said. Like, I'll have people come up to us and be like, I don't understand why she was so terrible to him. He was like a super supportive boyfriend. And then all people be like, he was the worst boyfriend.
He was
and
very like, passive aggressive, you know? The way that I felt. Like, he was like, fine, I'll just be over here. I need, you know, you can come talk to me, I guess. So Kyle, like, on one hand, you know, like, he acts like he's there for Sel, and he's just like, yeah, you know, but then on the other hand, he's just really passive aggressive. And like, it was almost like he was rolling his eyes half the time. And, you know, like, I wasn't sure how I felt about him throughout the whole thing, which I guess is very realistic. And I suppose depending on, you know, the relationships people are having, it could be helpful to see that different people deal with things in different ways.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's exactly what you had said, you know, to me, their relationship was one of those relationships where, you know, you've grown apart because you've grown up and changed, but, you know, you don't necessarily realize it until something happens to kind of polarize you. You know, I think that is something that many of us go through at some point in our lives. You know, as we go through relationships and friendships, and you realize that, you know, there is a moment where, you know, maybe the other person isn't necessarily a bad person. You just aren't a good fit anymore. And so, you know, I wanted to make their relationship realistic. You know, I didn't want either one of them to necessarily be a villain, but, you know, they were just at a point where they couldn't be a good person for the other one anymore.
Yeah, that definitely came through, you know. And even aside from the passive aggressive, like, I'll be over here when you need me, but you do need me, you know, like, it was almost like he wasn't really sure what his role was supposed to be, which, you know, and she didn't really know either. And I thought that that was a really powerful statement to be made, to be like, it's okay, just because this is the person you were with at this point in your life doesn't mean, again, like you said, like, they're not really a villain. They're just like, maybe not what you need right now. And I really loved her emerging relationship with the two other characters in the book, who were just really, they were really good characters. Abba, am I pronouncing his
they call him Abba.
He was really well written, because I wasn't really sure where he was coming from, but I knew I kind of liked him.
I think that like every writer has like their special like character who's their child, and Abayomi is like he's my favorite son. You know, and Fiends knows this.
Yeah, for sure. Abba's really, really good.
Yeah, he really was, and I really just enjoyed learning more about him and just seeing his relationship, his friendship really develop with Cell. And I don't want to give too much away about it, but I thought it was just like everything sort of happened in a very organic way. And, you know, you'd mentioned the palette before. I mean, it was beautiful for not just like, not just something that's a little spooky, like it kind of had like those mm-hmm. fall colors going for it. But also, like, when you think about pictures that are fading, you know, it almost had an archival quality to it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You got it. Bing, bing, bing. I mean, that's definitely something that I wanted to put throughout the entire thing. I mean, from the color palette to design style to the back matter as well. You know, I wanted it to feel complete, you know, and I think that's one of the things that I do best when it comes to creating a story. You know, we're not just creating, you know, a character and their journey and that's the end of the book. It's all encompassing. It's everything. It's everything from when you hold the book until you finish it and you just want to keep going back for more reasons other than the story. You know, it's all connected.
What are you working on now? Do you have anything new on the slate?
So currently, we're actually both working on two separate projects, but we are also working on another pitch for hopefully that gets picked up this year and we can get back on track with that. It's still kind of monster-y, horror-y, but this time it has a little, I think it's like a hair more lighthearted, it's a little younger. I don't know. There's not so much that we can say without giving it away.
Yeah, let's we don't have to go all the way there. do you generally prefer doing things that are slightly creepy in tone or slightly a little monstery in tone? Do you have any influences that like you really look to or something that, you know, is almost like just sort of in the background of your mind?
I write a lot of horror. I always have written a lot of horror. You know, I started out in prose writing. Archival Quality was the first comic script I ever wrote. And, you know, I've always been really drawn to ghost stories. I really love Shirley Jackson. And The Haunting of Hill House is my favorite book of all time. And there's a huge amount of inspiration from The Haunting of Hill House in Archival Quality. You know, I love movies by Guillermo del Toro. I feel like he treats ghosts and monsters in a really humanizing and empathetic way. And I find that to be really wonderful and beautiful. You know, I grew up watching horror. It's always been kind of my primary mode. But in my current projects and in this next project I'm working on with Fiends, I'm kind of branching out away from that a little bit. There are still horror elements in our next book that we're working on, but, you know, it is more, it is less of a classic monster story, I think, and more about, you know, using the monster as a way to kind of look at relationships and growing up. You know, I think that there are so many good horror books for kids and teens, and I would love to, like, add to that canon. I grew up absolutely loving, like, John Belair's, like, The Mummy, The Witch, and The Crypt? Something in the Crypt. like, all those haunted house books I was super into. So, you know, if I can contribute to that list for kids who look for something spooky, I would be, like, overjoyed.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the same for me. I mean, most of the time, I don't really care for writing. So I like to work with, you know, creators who can really bring something to the table, and with the Ivy, she brings that excellent character to the table. And I think that when I work on a project, I really want to like get into who they are as people, you know? So stories like that, I'm really drawn to. Obviously, I love scary stories. I mean, I've been reading, you know, and watching scary media for, you know, as long as I can remember. And I like to use that as inspiration in my work. But if I were to do other stuff as well, you know, I like nonfiction. I like, you know, doing educational comics and as well as adaptions as well. So things where I don't have to actually write fiction is my bread and butter, really.
Yeah, Steens is like incredible at having like an encyclopedic knowledge of like nonfiction topics. It's something I really admire about her. She watches more documentaries than anyone I've ever met in my entire life. And like, not on just like, you know, you meet people like, oh, I love documentaries. Like I'm watching like true crime or whatever. And I'll talk to Dean. She's like, I'm watching a documentary about one guy who plays Tetris.
I know exactly like, what you're talking
about. Specific tournament.
Yeah. The more like obscure subcultures are, the better. I think one that I just recently watched was the Great Buffalo Wing Hunt, where this man from Buffalo, New York, who has been living in Denmark, decides to take his friends and a few other colleagues across upstate New York to find the best buffalo wing. And
did he find something? I mean, because I'll go.
It's really, really great. But that's one of the things that I like so much. It's like, I am learning about all of these weird parts of our history and, you know, humanity, but I'm also like feeling connected to those people. Like at the end of the movie, I'm like choking up because I'm like, oh my God, he's going to win this. You know, this might be the best Buffalo Wings. You know, so I like to put that kind of stuff in my art. I want people to feel like, oh my gosh, this is real. This is emotional. And this is what makes us human is the weirdness. The tiny idiosyncrasies, you know, I want to know all of them.
I think that, like, one of the strongest things that Steens brought to Archival Quality, you know, I mean, like, I wrote these characters. I worked really hard to give them, like, you know, personalities and make them individuals and make them feel real. But what really made them feel real is that Steens is incredible at drawing facial expressions. And she conveys so much with how she draws facial expression and gesture, and I feel like it's like one-to-one with how much time she spends watching these documentaries about people, because I feel like that's how you really see, you know, people interact with each other. You know, both of us actually are like pretty big evangelists for reality television. And honestly, like, I think that watching reality TV has made me a better writer in terms of writing dialogue. Watching like the most hyperbolic form of human interaction is like really great when you're trying to figure out like how to write dialogue.
I think that's 100% right. And it also helps when it comes to figuring out what kind of inflections people use and how and why. So like a lot of times if I'm working on a long-term project, I'm in my office all day. And I'm looking at my artwork all day. And so I can't really look up and like watch, you know, quiet scenes or huge action scenes. You know, I want something that I can just kind of listen to and get the general idea of. And there's something about reality TV where a lot of it is repetition, you know, so it'll start off and they'll say like, I went to the vet to pick up my dog. And then you'll have a scene where they're like, I'm at the vet picking up my dog. And then someone says, so I met person at the vet as they were picking up their dog. And then it'll say, next time, you know, or next time after the commercial break, well, I finally got to the vet and I'm picking up my dog. And it's like you hear the same thing over and over and over again. And it's really great for someone like me who doesn't really have a very good like auditory like comprehension. So like I'm hearing it over and over and over again. And then finally I'm understanding like, okay, this is the story. And I don't know, it's like that repetition helps me realize like how people speak, you know, without having to hear it, you know, just once. You can hear it a million times and you're finally going to get it, you know?
I don't think I've ever heard anybody discuss reality TV that way. That's really fascinating and true. That's just a really interesting way of looking at it. What, so archival quality, and that's, is that, it's a one-off story. We're not are you going to ever revisit the characters, or it was meant to just be a complete story?
You know, I mean, it is its own story, but yeah. Sometimes when we're talking, we'll be like, what if we did archival quality too? But I feel like that's only when I'm like, I can't think of anything.
Yeah, I mean, it would be cool to go back to it just because, you know, we do have ideas for, you know, carrying on what happens with the gang, you know, like I mean, I don't want to spoil the ending or anything, but essentially there's more to be done. There are more things that they need to find and put back to where they need to be, you know, so it can very well turn into something that is more ongoing, or, you know, a single issue series even, you know, the foundation has been set for it. But, you know, we want to work on some other things first before going back to that playground.
Well, fair enough. And I want to thank you both so much for being, for calling in to talk to us, for talking to us.
Yeah, of course.
And
of course.
Yes. And thank you so much. Once again, this is Jessica, and my guests have been
Steens
and Ivy Noel Weir.
And I am going to close this chapter of Turn the Page.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.